Good morning, everyone, and we welcome you all to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. So glad you could join us. Today is Sunday, April 8th, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will begin with our morning prayer. Florence?
Yes, from Mrs. Eddy's prayer, given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And then from Miscellaneous Writings by Mary Baker Eddy. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. The subject of our lesson this morning: are sin, disease, and death real? Golden text, John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. And this goes with citation one in Science and Health. And Bruce, you want to read it?
The Bible declares, all things were made by him, the divine word, and without him was not anything made that was made. This is the eternal verity of divine science. If sickness, sin, sickness, and death were understood as nothingness, they would disappear. As vapor melts before the sun, so evil should vanish before the reality of good. One must hide the other. How important, then, to choose good as the reality.
Thank you.
Evil would vanish. Not only should, but would. So even John got a glimpse of the divine verity of science.
You know, I was thinking of the word, there's a popular word lately, it's called saturated. Talk about saturated colors. Well, if you're having a problem, a physical problem, or sin, disease, death, just saturate yourself with these truths. I told someone recently, just listen to this audio of this lesson. Read it, study it. There is no disease, Mrs. Eddy says. This is contrary to everything you've ever been taught by humanly from the world, your education. You need to saturate yourself in this truth, overflowing with it. This is the truth, and it makes sense. Did God make everything? And if he did, if it was good, then this other business is not true. We've just been taught to believe in it. So take these truths. Don't just go over it lightly. Saturate yourself. Let it go deep within your being. It will heal everything. It is the truth with a capital T. There's nothing to fear. I don't care what the lie is telling you. It's not true. This is the truth. And today we're going to get into, because number four, Carol in Science and Health.
The prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of Him, an unself-love. Regardless of what another may say or think on this subject, I speak from experience. Prayer, watching, and working, combined with self-immolation, are God's gracious means for accomplishing whatever has been successfully done for the Christianization and health of mankind.
Thank you. Mrs. Eddy's chapter on prayer is a masterpiece. Again, read it, listen to Florence's audio, saturate yourself in it as to what it means and is. It's different from anything else, because anything else is telling you, how do you pray? How are we taught to pray outside of science?
Pleading and
yes.
Asking for what we want.
Yes.
If you give me this, I will do this other thing.
Yes. Yes.
It's to picture something in your mind that you want, and then basically instruct God to give it to you, instead of submitting to His will.
So, when anyone says, thank you, Bruce, that my prayer hasn't been answered, you can ask them, do you have an absolute faith that all things are possible in God? Do you have a spiritual understanding of Him and unself-love? That, Mrs. Eddy says, that is what prayer is. It's action, it's doing, it's not pleading to God, it is affirmation. So, all of you, all of us, can work for these three things. More faith, more understanding, more of an unself-love. Then you will be a living prayer as you go about your day. This is the prayer that is answered. Now, what does self-immolation mean?
Well, humility.
Yes?
It means the burning of self.
Thank you very much. That's the answer. The burning of self. Prayer, watching, and working, combined with the burning of self. Okay, remember that. Are God's gracious means for accomplishing whatever has been successfully done in the Christianization and health of mankind. So this isn't about just sitting and asking God for this, that, and the next thing, and then, well, I prayed and God didn't answer my prayers. This is a whole new concept of it, a radical concept. That's why you saturate yourself in this truth. Listen to it over and over. Listen to the audio. Understand this. It will change your life. It will revolutionize your life. The Bible is full of the prayer of the righteous. The fervent prayer of the righteous will heal the sick. Something like that. Anyway. And then she goes on, prayer cannot change the science of being, but tends to bring us into harmony with it. So what does that mean?
It's not really changing anything. It's aligning with what is true already.
Thank you.
Thank you. Because healing is not changing anything except your perception of things. The change is in how I see things. Do I see things materially, humanly, negatively? Do I believe what the material senses are telling me? do I immerse myself in the truth and believe and see the spiritual reality of things? This is why, I mean, how do you burn out self? What is self-immolation? What burns out self? And what is this self that needs to be burned?
Personal sense.
Yeah.
The wrong sense of self, that I am material, subject to all the, you know, all the wrong things that can go on.
Thank you. Yeah, it's easy to have a wrong self sense of who you are, of who I am. And that wrong sense needs to be burned. I mean, this is not, you know, a bowl of cherries and a path of roses. It needs to be burned. And what burns it?
The truth, the correct sense of self.
Yeah. Either suffering or science, Mrs. Eddy says. Sometimes we suffer.
Yeah, it's a suffering. Talked about it. It's a suffering. That's when you say, you know, save Lord or I perish. When you've tried all the material means, all the doctors, everything else, and nothing's worked. So suffering is a means if you're not getting it any other way. That burns out self. No one likes to be suffering. And so, yeah, we're not changing God or asking God for anything. Prayer is for us. It doesn't affect God. God doesn't say, oh, look, so-and-so's praying, and I'm going to help that person. No.
I'm going to play Santa Claus.
Yeah. That's the personal sense of God. No, you're just you're aligning yourself up with him and the truth that he is. And then it goes on that what we need most, or what we most need, is the prayer of fervent desire. How fervent is your desire for growth in grace? This is what Fairley talked about yesterday, expressed in patience, meekness, love, and good deeds. Again, this is the prayer of action, isn't it? This is doing your prayer. This isn't just praying your prayer. It's living it in these ways. A fervent desire, patience, meekness, love, good deeds. And then the longing to be better and holier, expressed in daily watchfulness and in striving to assimilate more of the divine character, will mold us and fashion us anew until we awaken in his likeness. Again, a longing to be better and holier. That means you're not going to be on the computer looking at porn sites. That means you're not going to be watching movies or other things that you should not be doing. You can't be doing that even if you think it's in secret and expect your prayer to be answered. This is the living action of the prayer. You can't be deceitful. You can't be lying to your spouse or someone else and expect these prayers to be answered. You've got to be living this truth. And then, audible prayer, never do the works of spiritual understanding which regenerate, but silent prayer, watchfulness, and devout obedience enables us to follow Jesus' example. Now, someone has asked, and we've talked about this before, the difference between praying and watching. There's a lot about watching in here. What is the definition of watch? What I say unto you, I say unto all, watch. What are you to be doing?
Watch the thoughts that are coming into your, or presenting themselves in your thinking.
Yes, absolutely. Watching, it, you know, like you're on a watchtower, you're watching. When we do watches, we are watching what's going on in the world, usually, our nation, the world, and we are handling those suggestions, being very much aware of what's going on around you and watching.
I think she said that's why she used sentinel, on guard.
Yes, on guard.
Yeah. It's the watching to see what the enemy is trying to do. The enemy is trying to do something. It's nipping at the heels of mankind. You're either watching for it and handling it, or you're getting sucked into it and being handled by it.
What did you tell me about the watching, Linda? It's all over, Mrs. Eddy.
It's writing. All over.
Yes.
I didn't see it before I came to Plainfield, and I read it here and there. I'm not sure what I thought it was saying, or I even remember seeing the article on Watching Out by Mrs. Eddy, but all of a sudden I noticed it says prayer, pray, and watch. It's always often they're together, and I thought that was very powerful when I started to see, and she has it at least 100 times in prose work to watch in one way or another.
It is highly important, and it is what we talk about, the veil being cast over it, because this applies to me, too. Before I came here and started working with Mrs. Evans, I never noticed all this watching. You know, here she's saying it over and over and over again, over and over and over again, and yet most people in the organization, myself included when I was, had no idea what watching was or that I should watch. That's really strange, isn't it? But, and of course, now we have these wonderful books, Watches, Prayers, Arguments, and other books that enhance our watching experience. And those of you who have questions on it, you can go to our website and look and read. Do this for yourself. Now, prayer, what's the difference? Prayer is a little different. It's not a lot different, but...
There's a lot of gratitude in the prayer.
Yes. Affirming, gratitude, yeah. Praising. Yes. And as we just went over, all this living it. Because if you're really grateful, you're going to be doing all these things in your daily life.
I think also prayer includes what it says here in Science and Health, the fervent desire for growth and grace.
Yes.
That's what our prayer should be.
So you always be refuting the lie with the truth, like Jesus protesting, protest of truth, deep, conscientious protest of truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's praying.
And what does Mrs. Eddy say? She says desire is prayer, doesn't she?
Yes.
So prayer is whatever the honest desire in your heart really is. We're all praying for something. We all have desires in our heart. So the question is your prayer a righteous prayer or an unrighteous prayer? Is it a selfless prayer or a selfish prayer?
Mrs. Debbie, so when time is set aside specifically to watch, am I to understand that time should be just praying towards a one specific error or presentation of matter?
When you have a righteous prayer, you need to watch that the enemy doesn't throw things in the way of your being able to achieve your righteous prayer.
And watching usually involves something not involving you. When we watch, when we do our unity watch or your individual watch, you are praying for something, not yourself. You're not sitting there praying, you know, that you hope your son gets into college or something. You're praying for the world. You're praying very differently.
You're praying to rid the world of sin.
Yes.
However it shows up.
And how you do it or what you do it on is basically up to you. On our Unity Watches, we give you a springboard, and it should be covered, what we talk about on our Unity Watch. But then if God is telling you, I know Fairley's always praying for people in prisons or people in hospitals, maybe one prayer we need to have are the persecution of Christians throughout the world. There are various things that will come to you to pray about and watch about. So that's how that works. And that's individual between you and God, except on our Unity Watches, we start off with that. And you can spend the whole time on that, too, if you want to. God will unfold it. But many of these questions are answered on our website. We have a whole section on watching, and we do discuss it quite often. So look it up and listen to it and get the book, Watches, Prayers, and Arguments. So I'm going to go back now to the responsive reading. There's a lot we have to cover today that is very, very important. So Linda wrote about the first in responsive reading. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgression. And so what was blot?
Webster's 1828 says blot, to efface, to erase, to cause to be unseen or forgotten, to destroy, as to blot out a crime or the remembrance of anything.
And then what did you quote from
Carpenter's? Yeah, so from Spiritual Footsteps by Carpenter, quote, students love to contemplate the great goodness of God, but are not so willing to dip down into the uncovering of hidden modes of evil, a thing that must be done if man desires to find his spiritual freedom. They would like to be translated now, without first having to fulfill the obligation of uncovering error's hidden ways, end quote. And that was chapter 49.
Thank you. It's a very important point that it must be brought out, error's hidden ways. You can't just ignore it and jump to the God is all and love is love. You've got to deal with the animal magnetism. And if any of you missed yesterday's Bible study, it was a highly important one. We did the story of the fig tree, but also we went through the Lord's Prayer. And in that Lord's Prayer, there is that. Lead us not into temptation and deliver us from evil. So the important part of our prayer to be always cleansing yourself of any of this. In Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy talks about a moral question may hinder the recovery of the sick. Lurking error, lust, envy, revenge, malice, or hate will perpetuate or even create the belief in disease. Errors of all sorts tend in this direction. Your true course is to destroy the foe and leave the field to God. Life, truth, and love. Remembering that God and his ideas alone are real and harmonious. You've got to deal with it, but not for hours and hours. You take it up, you destroy it as no part of you, and then you leave the field to God. So thank you, Linda. And blotting out, that's important too, that we blot out these false images that try to haunt us. You know, if you've had some experience, past experience, or you've seen someone with a physical problem, and you don't hold those thoughts and you don't hold them. You blot them out. They're not of God, so you don't need to entertain it. And then this. Evening and morning and at noon will I pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. Now, I'm very grateful to Parsons. Parsons remembered something in an old Sentinel that he had read. He wasn't sure where it was, so he spent a lot of yesterday looking it up for me and found it. And so what is the point of this little verse here? Evening, morning, and at noon.
be always doing it
unceasing.
One time a day, but
thank you.
But at least three
days. Unceasing prayer.
Unceasing.
So in this article that Parthen sent, it was from a Sentinel, 1921, and I'm quoting now, but, well, the author, the name of the article was Habit of Praying by A. Warendorf, and it was actually 1923 issue. He talks about Daniel in the lion's den. I mean, he was thrown in there because he prayed three times a day, right? And then he quotes Mrs. Eddy, Miscellaneous Writings, page 133. Three times a day I retire to seek the divine blessing on the sick and sorrowing, with my face towards the Jerusalem of love and truth, in silent prayer to the Father, which seeth in secret, and with childlike confidence that he will reward openly. In the midst of depressing care and labor, I turn constantly to divine love for guidance and find rest. Beautiful. But that is an example. Three times a day. And then this article goes on to say that there was a person who was having a physical problem, and the practitioner told him that he was to get a Bible and copies of Mrs. Eddy's writings, to read them and order his life according to the teaching laid down in these books. I thought that was wonderful, because basically that's what we're telling you week after week after week. You get the Bible, you get Mrs. Eddy's writings, you read it, and you lay out your life according to those precepts. So it said that this person who needed healing, he was new to science, and he read in Miscellaneous Writings how Mrs. Eddy prayed three times a day. So he was going to imbibe these lessons in his life. So he began to do that. Now, the morning and evening were easy because he was home from work. But the middle part, the day in the middle, noontime, was a little more difficult. So he made a habit of prayer, that every noontime, and this time, this was years ago, he went to the reading room and prayed. And it was very hard for him. He had to pull himself out of meetings. He had to do, you know how it is when you're at work. But he did it every day. And he said, following these instructions, he was, after a bit, totally healed of his problem. And he attributes it to this obedience to these rules. You know, we used to set alarms, egg alarms, alarms on our watches, that we would remind us to pray, right? Wherever we were. You're at work, you go in the bathroom for 5 minutes. You have your lunch break, instead of sitting around with a lot of people, many of you, I know, went to the car and prayed in your car. Carol did. Lillian did. They had their lunch in the car where they could pray. Mr. Evans told us if you were in the office, you could hold your phone in your ear. People would think you were on a call, and you could be praying, mm-hmm. and they would think you were on a call, and they wouldn't interrupt you. There you go. Think how this would revolutionize and spiritualize the world if we really did this and faithfully did it. So, anyway, I was very grateful to dear Parthen for this. It's a good counsel.
I can add really quickly, because I was taught that here to do that. I would go at lunch to pray, and I was working with a practitioner at the job I was at, and almost every week, if not sometimes daily, changes would take place in my building. Chaos would turn to calm, disruption to order, unkindness to respectful behavior, I mean, you name it, anything that could have come up. We would work with children with disabilities, and sometimes there was a child in our room who was so destructive, and after I would come back, after talking to the practitioner, the whole room would change. And so it was blessing everything. And it changed the whole school. Sometimes there were things that would happen that would change.
It's wonderful.
So it was very, I love that rule or that instruction.
And this is the fruits of it. This is the fruits, and that's so important. And these fruits are proof of Emmanuel, God with us. It's not the barren fig tree. God forbid our church is the barren fig tree that bears no fruits. The fruits have to be here. It's proof that we're on doing the right thing. It's only a false sense of self that interferes with it. In miscellaneous writings from Mrs. Eddy, this is on Where Art Thou? It's a very important article, and she goes into that. She says that harmony is heaven. Science brings out harmony, that's what Linda was saying, but this harmony is not understood unless it produces a growing affection for all good and consequent disaffection for all evil, hypocrisy, evil speaking, lust, envy, hate. Where these exist, Christian Science has no sure foothold. They obscure its divine element and thus seem to extinguish it. Even the life of Jesus was belittled and belied by personalities possessing these defacing deformities. Only the devout Marys and such as lived according to his precepts understood the concrete character of him who taught by the wayside in humble homes to itching ears and to dull disciples the words of life. Again, you've got to be living it. Can't reach you if you're not. So don't complain. If you want to live your sinful life, go ahead, live it. But then don't complain when things are a mess. It's just the way it is. It's not my opinion. It's the truth. Okay, Elizabeth, I want you to read. She was my voice show. Shalt thou hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning will I direct my prayer unto thee and will look up. So what did you write on the forum?
This is from the Treasury of David. In the morning, this is the fittest time for intercourse with God. An hour in the morning is worth two in the evening. While the dew is on the grass, let grace drop upon the soul. Let us give to God the mornings of our days and the morning of our lives. Prayer should be the key of the day and the lock of the night. Devotion should be both the morning star and the evening star. And it just served as a reminder to direct my prayers to God first thing every day.
That was just beautiful. Again, so important. Put him first and last.
And always,
and in between. Thank you, Elizabeth. So, and then Dale wrote also something very important. Dale, you want to mention?
Well, in Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, and it's in the blue book as well, but my pages are different in my edition, so I referenced the website. It's the morning prayer in Mrs. Eddy's household, and also the evening prayer, and I use those to, especially in the morning, I extend that prayer to include my family, community, state, our nation, and the whole world. And that morning prayer starts out, "This is God's spiritual household. Nothing can enter to annoy or destroy. Nothing can enter to manifest sin, sickness, or discouragement. For God, good, keeps this household in perfect peace."
Thank you. And then the night prayer?
The evening prayer begins, "Before you are ready to close your eyes in sleep, be sure you are not holding anything unlovely in your consciousness, anything unlike God. laying aside every fear, put yourself entirely in his charge. Quiet yourself with the thought that he who has all power will protect you, give you health, and all you need in abundance. And know that whether sleeping or waking, you are safe because your life is hid with Christ in God.
Beautiful. What a way to begin and end. These are treatments. Now this is again perhaps different. These are treatments for yourself. And we must be treating ourselves. You can't go around thinking you can help everybody else when you haven't gotten yourself in line. Treatments. And again, that book, Watches, Prayers, Arguments, it's full of it. Full of them. I use it all the time. And you should too. They were given by Mrs. Eddy to her students. Thank you both. And then, this was also Parsons and Florence. And I will quote the highlights of what Parsons wrote. Maybe I'll have Gary do a change of voice list, too.
Okay. Mark 11:23 makes it clear that I am actively to rise up and speak to any mountain that needs to be removed from my life, not simply to remain passive, beseeching God to remove it. Then, quote, God is the only intelligence and cannot believe because he understands. There is neither substance nor intelligence in the mountain mirage that seemeth what it is not, and such is mortal man. That's, I think, from the first
edition. That's the first edition, yes. She refers to it, the mountain mirage, and he is referring to Mark 11, for verily I say unto you, that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. Therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. I wrote an article about this not too long ago, but this to me applies to Mrs. Eddy's command statements 390 to 393 in Science and Health. Again, this isn't the prayer that's just, dear Lord, please help me. This is a command prayer. This is it, boy. This is, you are speaking with authority of the truth. You've got to be in that spirit to do this. You've got to be living this prayer, as we've talked about, moment by moment. You can't be doing whatever you darn well please and expect this to work. But when you are in that spirit, you can command it. And remember, it is a mountain mirage. And Florence, what did you say about it?
I think that was the most important point that he's saying, that this is a mountain mirage. So we have to recognize, no matter how it looks, how aggressive, how often it comes, it is still a mirage. Therefore, with the power of God, and like you've explained, you can speak to it. And I like Mrs. Eddy, what she said, speak the truth to every form of error. Tumors, ulcers, tubercles, inflammation, pain, deformed joints, waking dream shadows, dark images of mortal thought which flee before the light of truth. I just love the strength of what she's saying. It's just with so much power. And, to recognize this is, I'm speaking to something that's not true.
Thank you. Because a mountain, and I, in the article I wrote, I said as a child I used to think, you know, that was a real mountain that was going to slide down into the sea. But the mountains are our problems. And the more we dwell on these problems and think about them, and, oh my gosh, I'm not going to pay that bill, I don't have a job, things are getting worse, the economy's bad. You build it, and you've got this huge mountain. Well, you've built it in your thought. by your unbelief and with the understanding of God, with the living of the prayer, you will get where you have the authority that you can cast it out and prove it to be untrue, whatever the problem is.
And if you are faithful in the little things in life, you will be master of the big things.
Thank you.
It builds the strength to do it.
Yep.
It does.
Yep. I mean, how did David prepare himself for Goliath?
The shepherd.
He faithfully protected the sheep. He faithfully took up everything that would attack the sheep. And he knew that God was his strength. He proved regularly that God was there giving him the strength to protect those sheep. And when Goliath came along, well, that was just one more thing, just like the other things he'd taken care of. And that's how it should be with us. When we take care of every little thing that comes to us each day,
I think it's also the love of God in doing this, obeying him and all that, that casts away the fear that you would ordinarily have of whatever is facing you.
It's like the watching point this week. Once we get through that extra scoop of dirt, we're that much stronger.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, as you handle these little things day by day, there won't be any big things, or you won't see them as big things, because you've been keeping the ground level all along. The mountain hasn't grown. You've just been doing your work. It's only when you let things go and go and go and go that these mountains seem to loom up.
And we prove our love for God. How? In obedience, by not tolerating anything ungodlike for a moment.
I thought it was interesting, too. Parthens made the point that out of all the things that Mrs. Eddy could have started her chapter on prayer, she used this, Mark 11. Thousands of things she could have used, but she chose this. And everything she chooses, we must realize, prayerfully has been chosen and thought through. So that's a powerful statement. And that was after the dried up fig tree that he said this. So I don't know if Susan added, I don't know if you could tell us briefly about the Reba fix before we get into one other thing here.
Oh, a fig farmer, a Christian fig farmer, had a really interesting website, and he said that figs have an initial fig, like the early crop of figs, and they're kind of hiding behind the leaves. And so he was saying that in the Middle East, where Jesus and the disciples, where everyone lived, they would have known this, that if they saw the leaves on the tree, there'd be a good chance there'd be the little early figs. And so that's why he said if you would happily find some figs, but there weren't even any early figs on the trees. So this showed that this really was kind of a worthless fig tree. And the fig farmer himself planted a bunch, like 500 trees of a variety that didn't produce any figs. So he cut them down himself to plant a better variety that would produce figs, because apparently fig trees are very, very easy. If you got the right fig trees, it's very easy to produce figs. So it was just really interesting from the perspective of a Christian fig farmer, his interpretation of this Bible passage. He said there's, you know, Jesus would have probably been looking for a breba fig, which he said are smaller, but if you're hungry, people knew then to look behind the leaves and they'll find the little breba figs before the main crop.
Thank you, Suzanne. We've got Bruce as a fig farmer, as well as other things. Now, there's one other topic I want to get to before we close, and that is in the article Mrs. Eddy wrote, Is There No Sacrificial Atonement? She says, the glory of human life is in overcoming sickness, sin, and death. That so stood out to me. And Suzanne, I was going to write something more, but Suzanne wrote it for me. She gave us a definition. Can you give us a definition of glory? Or Linda? Part of it was honor, praise, fame.
Fame.
But then...
honor, praise, renown, celebrity, and also the felicity of heaven prepared for the children of God, celestial bliss, honorable representation of God.
Thank you. That's what I think of glory. Mine is the glory. And we all want, I mean, we need to have feeling that some purpose to our life, some meaning to our life, so it's not just the old, dull, day-to-day boring stuff that some people seem to go through, monotonous. And she's saying, this is what gives the glory. For thine is the glory. And so, as you're living these prayers each day, as you're overcoming sin, disease, and death, moment by moment in your life, you will find the glory to life. If you don't do it, and if you ignore all of this, and we all have these opportunities every day, but if you ignore it and just keep getting your mountain bigger and bigger and bigger, you won't experience this glory. I thought it was just a profound statement. And then Suzanne makes the point, too, everyone looking for their glory. You know, I guess that's the reason people have YouTube or do all this stuff.
Absolutely.
And it's a 15-minute glory. Unsatisfying glory. This is where you find your glory, in obeying these precepts of God. Get your Bible, your Signs and Health, your prose work. Live this truth. Live these prayers. And then I ended with one of my most favorite hymns, which I'll have Gary end on in a few minutes, hymn number 49. It is by John Greenleaf Whittier. And I just love his poetry. I have one of his old poetry books and his hymns, as evidently did Mrs. Eddy. And I was reading where, after she had her healing in Lynn, I guess, and her husband kind of, you know, her husband kicked her out, or they had ended up with a divorce, she went and she lived in Amesbury for a year from... I don't know, I think 1869 to 1870. Anyway, and that's where John Greenleaf Whittier lived. And as she lived there, she was writing. They said that all they ever saw that woman do was write, pages and pages. I'm sure she was working on all her work at that point. But she had a friend there who wanted her to go and see John Greenleaf Whittier, because everyone who came to that town wanted to meet him, because he was, even at that time, a famous poet. He was a Quaker. And Mrs. Eddy said, well, she really wasn't interested, and it was Mrs. Patterson at the time. She didn't really want to, until she heard that he was sick. And then she said, okay, I'll go. So she and her friend walked a mile across town and came to his house. And it says that Whittier sat helplessly by the fire, coughing incessantly, unable to speak, louder than a whisper. Mrs. Eddy sat patiently and calmly beside him. The atmosphere is more comfortable outside than inside, she said, motioning toward the windows and the warm summer day beyond. She continued talking with him in the line of science and soon noticed a change in his pallor. By and by, his countenance changed, and the sunshine of his former character beamed through the cloud, and his friends sat wrapped in interest in the truth that I had presented. When I arose to go, he came to me with both hands extended and said, I thank you, Mary, for your call. It has done me much good. Come again. The next day, he walked down to the village and was well. Said that he often spoke of Mary Baker Eddy in that visit and what it did for him. So that was living her prayer. That was overcoming sin, disease, and death in her daily life. And I will have Gary end with a beautiful hymn by John Greenleaf Whittier in our hymnal, number 49.
Dear Lord and Father of us all, forgive our foolish ways. Reclothe us in our rightful mind. In purer lives thy service find. In deeper reverence praise. In simple trust, like theirs who heard beside the Syrian sea, the gracious calling of the Lord, let us, like them, without a word, rise up and follow thee. Breathe through the pulses of desire thy coolness and thy balm. Let sense be dumb, let flesh retire. Speak through the earthquake, wind, and fire, O still small voice of calm. Drop thy still dews of quiet, till all our striving cease. Take from us now the strain and stress, and let our ordered lives confess the beauty of thy peace.
Thank you. And anytime I'm feeling a little upset or anxious or stressed, I go to that hymn, and it's instant calmness. So I thank God. We know today we will all go forth knowing much better the real way to pray and to keep this in our hearts and minds and have a wonderful service. This truth goes out to bless all mankind. We have a treat today. Isaac, who is Jeremy's boy, is going to play the clarinet for us, and Bruce on the flute, A Closer Walk with Thee. So we'll have a wonderful day. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.